The missile was still 5 million kilometers away when the glare of its plasma-breaking jets became clearly visible in Endeavour's main telescope. By that time, the secret was already out, and Norton had reluctantly ordered the second and perhaps final evacuation of Rama. But he had no intention of leaving until events gave him no alternative. When it had completed its braking maneuver, the unwelcome guest from Mercury was only 50 kilometers from Rama, and apparently carrying out a survey through its TV cameras. These were clearly visible, one fore and one aft, as were several small omni-antennas and one large directional dish aimed steadily at the distant star of Mercury. Norton wondered what instructions were coming down that beam and what information was going back. Yet the Hermians could learn nothing that they did not already know. All that Endeavour had discovered had been broadcast throughout the solar system. This spacecraft, which had broken all speed records to get here, could only be an extension of its maker's will, an instrument of their purpose. That purpose would soon be known, for in 3 hours the Hermian ambassador to the United Planets would be addressing the General Assembly. Officially, the missile did not yet exist. It bore no identification marks and was not radiating on any standard beacon frequency. This was a serious breach of law, but even Space Guard had not yet issued a formal protest. Everyone was waiting with nervous impatience to see what Mercury would do next. It had been 3 days since the missile's existence and origin had been announced. All that time, the Hermians had remained stubbornly silent. They could be very good at that when it suited them. Some psychologists had claimed that it was almost impossible to understand fully the mentality of anyone born and bred on Mercury. Forever exiled from Earth by its 3 times more powerful gravity, Hermians could stand on the moon and look across the narrow gap to the planet of their ancestors, even of their own parents, but they could never visit it. And so, inevitably, they claimed they did not want to. They pretended to despise the soft rains, the rolling fields, the lakes and seas, the blue skies, all the things that they could know only through recordings. Because their planet was drenched with such solar energy that the daytime temperature often reached 600 degrees, they affected a rather swaggering roughness that did not bear a moment's serious examination. In fact, they tended to be physically weak, since they could only survive if they were totally insulated from their environment. Even if he could have tolerated the gravity, a Hermian would have been quickly incapacitated by a hot day in any equatorial country on Earth. Yet in matters that really counted, they were tough. The psychological pressures of that ravening star so close at hand, the engineering problems of tearing into a stubborn planet and wrenching from it all the necessities of life, these had produced a Spartan and in many ways highly admirable culture. You could rely on the Hermians. If they promised something, they would do it, though the bill might be considerable. It was their own joke that if the sun ever showed signs of going nova, they would contract to get it under control once the fee had been settled. It was a non-Hermian joke that any child who showed signs of interest in art, philosophy, or abstract mathematics was plowed straight back into the hydroponic farms. As far as criminals and psychopaths were concerned, this was not a joke at all. Crime was one of the luxuries that Mercury could not afford. Commander Norton had been to Mercury once, had been enormously impressed, like most visitors, and had acquired many Hermian friends. He had fallen in love with a girl in Port Lucifer, and had even contemplated signing a 3-year contract, but parental disapproval of anyone from outside the orbit of Venus had been too strong. It was just as well. "AAA message from Earth, Skipper," said the bridge. "Voice and backup text from Commander-in-Chief. Ready to accept? Check and file text. Let me have the voice. Here it comes." Admiral Hendricks sounded calm and matter-of-fact, as if he was issuing a routine fleet order instead of handling a situation unique in the history of space. But then he was not 10 kilometers from the bomb.